Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, we take you to Manitoba Ag Days, where you'll hear from some of the speakers, including Dr. Neil Harker of Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, who teaches us about integrated weed control. We'll also hear from Scott Garvey of Grain News about the latest machinery innovations unveiled at this year's show. And finally, Brian Perea of CanFax fills us in on where he thinks cattle markets are headed. But first, here's today's host, Gord Gilmore.
In the internet age, with better and faster access to information, you might think the farm show would be fading. Instead, if the foot traffic here at Ag Days is any indication, they're going stronger than ever. There's been a full schedule of speakers, and we're going to speak some of the best for you and give you just a taste of the farm show if you weren't able to come yourself. Our first guest today is Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada weed scientist Neil Harker. Harker says weed resistance is poised to become a real wreck, and acting now will help you prepare for this coming challenge. Neil, I'm going to start with what I see as being sort of the elephant in the room, and that is the question of whether or not we're taking this whole issue seriously enough in Western Canadian agriculture.
I think that's a great question, because I think we're definitely not taking it seriously enough. There's always that feeling out there that perhaps technology will come along and save us. And in this case, it doesn't seem to save us in other parts of the world. I don't think it'll help in Canada either.
So can you tell us a little bit then about what is that perception that's out there that technology is somehow going to save us? Is it sort of the search for the new product? And why isn't that likely to happen? Because it sounds to me like you think not so much.
Yeah, I think it's just the way that we're so technology dependent in the last few years. And we've had so many great herbicides. And starting in the 80s, where there was a big boom of herbicides, they came along steadily for quite a few years. But it seems like we've picked the low-hanging fruit. In other words, there doesn't seem to be an obvious new mode of action that's cheap enough, safe enough, or maybe it's just not out there available for extra use.
And in your presentation earlier today, you talked about some stuff that was a little alarming when I saw it. And one of the things that was perhaps the most alarming was the development of multiple resistance in wild oat. And you showed some information in out in Alberta where there were really maybe one or two products left, and some of them weren't even the one of them at least wasn't even all that commonly in use. So you're really in a situation where you have one single product left. And to me, that looks dangerous. To me, in a lot of ways, sort of multiple or completely resistant wild oat is kind of a kryptonite for Western Canadian agriculture. This is our toughest weed, and without control for it, we're in a wreck.
I agree. Wild oat is our driver weed in Western Canada in many cases. And so when we have resistance to all of the major group 1 herbicides, all the major group 2 herbicides, and herbicides such as Avidex or Triolate, and we're only left with a herbicide like Treflan, that forces us in to make decisions on how we crop. Sometimes we need to till to get that herbicide in. Sometimes it might work as a granular, but we're left with very few options, and that's not where we want to be.
Mm-hmm. And as those options disappear, then our list of sort of possible options to grapple with this problem, it seems to grow smaller and smaller. And I guess what I'm interested in hearing from you then is, what does this look like if we get into a real wreck, and if we do end up in a situation where we don't really have any chemical controls for some key weeds? What's that going to look like to the average farmer in Western Canada?
Well, the first thing it looks like is your costs for weed control are going to go way up. And whereas in the U.S., in the southern U.S. in cotton, they can still hand weed for 2 to 3 times the normal herbicide cost, hand weeding in Western Canada on large acres isn't an option. So it really means that you're going to have to grow a totally different crop that isn't reliant on herbicides. You may be forced to grow some perennial grasses or perennial forage, and they right now just aren't as profitable. It's going to take some of the profitability out of farming.
Now, that raises an interesting question to me then, because we need, I think your presentation made the case that we need to start taking some steps to integrate integrated weed management. But I think there is that perception that a lot of these steps are going to be expensive, they're going to be difficult, and they're just kind of, the whole discussion gets sidelined there in sort of a chase for ease and simplicity. Is that a fair assessment? Am I being unfair when I say that?
No, that is the perception, is that if you're going to do integrated weed management, perhaps two things. You might not get as effective as weed management as you are currently, and it'll be more difficult. More knowledge is required, more cost. And in some cases, that's a fair perception. It is going to take some sacrifice, but it's like saying to your son when he gets out of high school, do you want to go work in the oil patch and make big money right now? Or do you want to work for your future and do well for the long term? And I see that as a very similar type of dilemma.
And just in pure dollar and cents terms, isn't this like many of the problems we grapple with agronomically, the really intractable ones, isn't this going to be cheaper to deal with now than later?
Oh, definitely, yeah. This is a problem that if you wait until it drives you out of business, that's really not cheap. But if you start to do small things now that will delay resistance, and there are things you can do just simply by upping seeding rates or growing a more competitive crop, there are things you can start to do. It won't be the panacea that solves all the problems, but it will delay resistance.
Mm-hmm. Really, what we're talking about is a world where we're moving from sort of reaching in and pulling out the one big tool from the toolbox to deploying a bunch of different smaller tools through the year, correct?
That's very correct, and in fact, you've nailed it. One of the weed scientists, ecologists, has called this the big hammer as opposed to many little hammers. So the big hammer is herbicides. It's easy, it's cheap, and we've become used to it, but applying many little hammers is the way we're going to have to go in the future.
Well, it's a bit of a sobering message, but I still thank you for sharing it with us, Neil. For Between the Rows, I'm Gord Gilmore at Ag Days. Dr. Neil Harker is a research scientist with Agriculture Canada. You're listening to Between the Rows, a special on-location edition at Ag Days in Brandon. I'm your host, Gord Gilmore. Joining me now is Grain News Machinery Editor Scott Garvey, who's been taking a look around the show and is here to tell us all about it. Scott, what would you say the overall tone has been with the machinery exhibits this year? Are people excited? What are the machinery dealers telling you?
Well, people are always excited around machinery, that's for sure. When you get a group of farmers in front of some sheet metal, they're enjoying themselves. As far as whether, you know, shows right now are producing the kind of hard and fast sales numbers they did a couple of years ago is probably not the case. In fact, we know that overall the industry is down fairly significantly, and some sectors are hurting worse than others. I had one implement manufacturing rep saying last year was, in his words, kind of brutal. So that's been the trend. But there's always a lot to look at these shows, although this year I would say the number of new introductions from the brands in terms of the volume of them is probably down a little bit. And I would, although it takes a while to develop a new machine, I would have to say that it's probably due at least in part to the softening of sales.
What can you tell us about what was generating a lot of excitement at the machinery booths?
Well, this year, Home Sun Versatile is showing their brand new paint scheme for their full product line. And it's, whether you're a Versatile aficionado or not, I think you have to admit it's a pretty snappy looking a new kind of paint scheme, and it seems to certainly be attracting attention of the farmers passing by. They seem to be overall enjoying the new look, and of course these days any way manufacturers can get eyes on their machines is important, and this new look for the Versatile brand is probably going to help mm-hmm. in that regard.
Can you kind of sketch it out for it? What is the look?
Well, they've kind of gone back to what they're referring to as their heritage colors. It is reminiscent of what we saw in the Versatile brand through the 80s, kind of in the Series 3 machines. They've got a black top with some yellow, with, of course, the main body color still red, and they've gone back to yellow rims. I know that this has been a long time in the planning for them. They've been looking at new looks for their machines for some time. I had a fairly in-depth interview with the brand's marketing manager, Adam Reed, yesterday, and we talked about this. And they've kind of decided that now with the machinery they have, that that color scheme once again does fit the look.
Mm-hmm. And I remember those tractors you were talking about from the 80s and 90s, and they were striking looking. They were one of the things I always said about them is that you couldn't miss them as you were going down the road or saw one in the field. They really jumped out at you.
That's right, and that's what I think this new color scheme does for them again, because, of course, they're competing with two other red brands, and they need to be able to be identifiable from a bit of a distance and stand out from the other brands who share the same basic body color.
What about moving on from sort of the big ticket items, short line equipment, much interest there this year?
I think overall in the market, short line is probably one of the segments in the industry that's suffering a bit from the downturn in sales. We do tend to see a lot of short line equipment at this particular show. This is probably the show where arguably you might see it the most, this being a regional show, and we're seeing a lot of those manufacturers still keeping a pretty strong presence here at the show despite a softer market condition.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's in any way related to the fact that a lot of short line equipment is manufactured here in Manitoba?
Well, that's a good point. A lot of it is. In fact, we've seen Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and to a lesser extent Alberta kind of become the agricultural equipment manufacturing center of the country, kind of taking that away from southern Ontario a few decades ago when I was a kid. So it's a home show for many of these brands in a lot of ways, and I think they want to turn out, they want to be represented in their region where they have a base of customers.
That's great, Scott. Thanks a lot. I think we'll cut it off there. Don't want to give away too much of your show. If you want to see more of what Scott's been up to, I would suggest that you refer to Grain News newspaper, and Scott's work will be there. Scott Garvey is the machinery editor for Grain News. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host, Gord Gilmore, on location at Ag Days in Brandon. Joining me now is Brian Perea, Senior Market Analyst with Canfax. Brian, we had this increase in prices, high prices, and it was definitely welcome, I think, in the industry that had some ground to make up from the BSE crisis. But ultimately, you seem to make the case that it also muddied the waters a bit in terms of what's a good price for cattle. So can you tell us a little bit about your thinking on that?
Yeah, you bet. $3 calves, as I kind of said, it was a lot of fun selling $3 calves and $3 plus calves. But after that, unfortunately, they muddied the water, and they didn't help the industry a lot. The guys who bought those, the feedlots, they had record losses after buying those cattle, and that drove up costs through the entire supply chain, and everybody was sort of scrambling to raise their prices, including retailers, it did maybe have its impact on the demand side of things. And ultimately, now we've got to pay back. Now we've got to bring those prices back down, and everybody's got to get back to reality. And it's just hard that it shifted so much from the producer's point of view and perspective of what is a good price anymore, and what are we willing to, do the work for and get this industry kind of rolling again for the longer term.
In a lot of ways, I think we're kind of, in my admittedly layperson perspective, we're kind of working through the hangover of that. I looked at your information on retail prices, and it seems like that's been pretty sticky, and that seems to come down to basically the retail industry working through that hangover. But now that has an effect on demand as well. So can you talk a little bit about what effect that has and why it's been as sticky as it has and when we might see that breaking up a bit?
Yeah. And, that delay has kind of gone on a little longer in terms of the consumers now seeing, fed cattle prices dropping over 40% from their highs. Retail prices haven't adjusted nearly that much. On the other hand, we got to remember that the retailer did not increase his price nearly like, the stickiness did. It reduced the rise in the retail prices. But obviously, it squeezed the retailer margin as beef prices went up. They didn't pass it all to consumers. Now that the beef prices have come down, they are, they're being a little bit stickier in terms of bringing them down to maintain prices. We got to remember in retail data, the data we have, it doesn't include all of the featuring and specials. And a lot of meat and a lot of beef is sold, as loss leaders. Or it's, when they do these features on ground beef for steaks or roasts, that's not in the data. And that's really when you get kind of, you'll start to get meat, you know, flying off the shelves, let's call it. And we're starting to see some of that come. And that's, you know, been part of the reason we've seen this uptick in the market lately, and feedlots getting more current and carcass weights coming down. And ultimately, you know, we've actually looking at a little less product in the short term, and demand is starting to pick up. So there's always a lag there. It was maybe extended this time, but we're starting to see some of it work through.
We're also seeing some interesting stuff in terms of our cattle herd relative to the size of the American herd. We saw the American herd increase over the last couple of years, as is my understanding, and we didn't really see the same bump in Canada. Can you comment a little bit on that? My suspicion is that it might be related to that BSE hangover, that the folks just didn't have the money to do that, and they needed to make up the ground, and so they did, but they were a little hesitant to jump in and make any investments. Is that accurate? Out to lunch?
Yeah. No, there's some accuracy. That's probably, I'd say, maybe half the reason. We'll get to the other. On the other half, but you know, if definitely, I think the BSE case, and you know, looking back, it's maybe not all bad. I think a lot of producers sold calves at record high prices, and they just pocketed the money, or they needed it for other things, and instead of buying into those record high breeding stock animals, which are now also way down, you know, they've actually got cash and equity in their pockets, and you know, that maybe worked for them, whether maybe not even intentionally, but it's maybe put our cow-calf producers with pretty good equity positions. But definitely, there's a hesitancy after BSE. You know, we kind of lost a generation, so we don't have those young people. Some of them either left or they're super hesitant on expanding. And we've also continued to see our producers age and kind of maybe waiting. They went through 10 tough years of drought and BSE and rising grain prices, rising dollar, waiting for the time to cash out. And we saw some expansion, but it was only enough to offset the guys who got out. So I think there is definitely some relationship to what we've been through and why we didn't expand. On the other side, though, on the other maybe reason we've really seen the U.S. expand rapidly, and sometimes some people don't, some analysts say, well, it's not real expansion, it's just recovery. And a lot of that was, you know, 2011, 2012, 2013, the United States went through there was a drought or some severe droughts in the United States where they'd lost a couple million cows, very much likely due to drought in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas. And really, they've just restocked them. So they've expanded, sure, from their lows, but they're really going through a restocking kind of structure, or a restocking kind of expansion, as you want to call it. So that distorts it a little bit too.
Now let's talk a little bit about this continental market that we've had emerge over the last, you know, 20 years or so. We've seen the North American cattle market really become the North American cattle market, and the products pass freely over the border. Is that at risk now with the Trump presidency? I wonder what's going to happen in terms of the renegotiation of NAFTA, things like the reintroduction of COOL. Do we have any sense at all how that might play out yet? Or are we just sort of waiting and watching like everybody else is?
Yeah. You bring up questions about Trump, and it only brings up more questions, I think. It's a big guess at this point for the most part. Lots of rhetoric and, you know, politics, what they say and what they do once they get there can be two things. And, ultimately our feeling, and even some of the terminology and some of the wording around the NAFTA renegotiations has softened a little bit from, you know, I think probably was floating around that he was going to throw NAFTA out, renegotiating it, to now let's review the impact it's had on the economy and assess, you know, where we could improve it or fix it. And, you know, there's always opportunities to get things better. Whether Canada would have any input into building a case for ourselves would be a question. But it adds a lot of volatility, uncertainty. A lot of it is let's just watch and see. And, you know, we're not jumping the gun, I think, as an industry association and trying to anticipate anything in particular. We're feeling that we have a good case, that trade has benefited both sides, and hopefully, you know, that reason can be made and stuck to.
And it seems to me that one of the biggest risks in terms of our relationship with the U.S. is actually out of the hands of all the politicians, and that's the Forex risk. Like the impact you're talking about Forex movement was really kind of eye-opening to me. A penny equals 4 cents, basically, is the formula.
Yeah.
So what's your advice then to farmers in terms of managing that risk?
Yeah, it is huge. You know, we've seen such a massive correction in cattle prices and cattle futures. Luckily in Canada, you know, I said the U.S. prices have adjusted a lot more than Canada simply because our dollars cushion some of that blow. And, you know, ultimately, since the election, the U.S. dollar has gone mainly up, and, you know, it may even have some more upside potential. It looks like it has some more upside potential, which is good to our dollar. But there is always this uncertainty around it, is definitely an issue. You know, the main things for cattle producers, there's price insurance program out there, and it's available across Western Canada. And, you know, you can, in February here, you'll be able to start buying price insurance to ensure prices for your calves in the fall. You know, and that protects you against the rising dollar. And if the dollar goes down and the markets are stronger, well, you know, you're out your premium, but you get to enjoy any rally from prices. You know, if you get more technical, you can hedge the dollar. You can buy a call option. You know, in my mind, a call option's not that expensive. You know, protect $100,000 for $1,000. You know, you can protect $100,000 of U.S. dollars. So if the dollar really moves against you, you're covered. And there are, you got to do, you know, do your homework before you maybe get into some of those things. But a simple one is price insurance. But follow the markets. And, you know, I definitely think there's, you know, I was kind of saying, you know, I'm a little bit negative on the dollar, which would be good, but nothing's for sure today, that's for sure.
And we've been seeing a lot of volatility in cattle markets, and it sounded to me from your presentation that you really expected that's probably going to continue for the foreseeable future.
Generally, you know, we've seen volatility, you know, as I said, that's the other thing, you know, unfortunately, the volatility is sort of taken away from the positive parts of these markets. We've seen our prices rally 25% since October. That's huge. But unfortunately, they fell so darn much, it's not nearly as exciting as normal. And so, yeah, the volatility is still there. Just in the last 2 months, we've liked this volatility because it's gone up. But longer-term trends in terms of meat production and supplies look a bit burdensome. And, yeah, there's likely to continue to be some level of volatility.
Well, I think that's not going to be unexpected for any of the people listening to this. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Brian. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
No, I appreciate being here.
For today's host, Gord Gilmore, and everyone else at Between the Rows, thanks for listening. Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. If you like what you heard on today's show and you want to hear more, go to membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.